I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in. Welcome back to What It Takes, the podcast where we dive into the real stories behind the business, the people, and the journeys that shape them. Today, we're pulling back the curtain to the world of high-stakes, high-impact corporate events. And joining us is someone who knows the stage like few others do. Evan Williams is the CEO and co-founder of Riverview Systems Group, and this is a Northern California-based live event production company that's been lighting up stages and screens for nearly four decades. Under Evan's leadership, Riverview has supported major global brands. Think of Google, Apple, Cisco, and they've been delivering world-class corporate events across video, audio, lighting, and scenic design. But Evan's story isn't just about business, it's about vision. With a background in both accounting and in theater, plus a master's in lighting design and theater technology, he's the rare leader who blends creative roots with business acumen. He's also an educator, an industry advocate, a board member, and even co-founder of the Rhythm Academy of San Jose. And this is a percussion school where he helped launch in 2014. So when the pandemic hit and Evan led Riverview through one of its toughest and biggest pivots ever, he built in-house studios and shifted to virtual production. And he did all of this while keeping his entire team employed. So he's got stories, insight, and a deep passion for the experience behind every event. And I'm speaking for myself. Hopefully you're just as thrilled to have him here today. So welcome, Evan. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for the kind words and the intro. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so excited to talk to you because I'm a bit of a theater geek myself as a kid, did shows. But in my adult life, it kind of translates more to, you know, what we see in the modern day Christian church. And, you know, and I think a lot of that translated really well for me. But it's really also cool to see a fellow creative, but also business person. So for me, I already just in kind of learning about what you do and kind of in the booking process of getting you on the show, I was really personally excited to get to know you. And you've been in the live event production world for nearly 40 years. What originally inspired you to blend theater, tech, and then business into your career path? Because that's not something we normally see.
No, and it was actually a advice of my parents at the time when I decided to go back to school, which was, yeah, theater's great, lighting's great, music is great, but you really should have something to fall back on. And it came easily to me, and I didn't know whether I would end up using it or not when I was getting that undergraduate degree. But as it turned out, you know, everything happens for a reason, and it helped me to launch the company with my partner and at the same time take care of the books early on when we couldn't afford to hire a bookkeeper and all those things back in 1987.
Oh, that's awesome. Or as my kids say in the 1900s, I just had a conversation last night. He's like, you know, back in, what did you do when you, you know, for New Year's and in the year 2000, you know, back in the 1900s. And I'm like, whoa, calm down there. Calm down there, boys. So the 80s to me is like, we said 80s and 90s. It wasn't the 1900s. But yeah, that's a long time away, I think, for a lot of people. But I think with that, it's a lot of learned, you know, experiences, lessons along the way. And I'm really curious to learn about, I mean, you guys have delivered for some of the biggest names in tech. Like, what were some of those experiences like producing events at that scale? Like, what's one of the most memorable ones that you've worked on?
I'll have to talk about a specific one because in this business, and certainly in this particular business, as we like to say, our best work is done under NDA. Mm-hmm. Our largest customers, we're not allowed to talk about them. We're not allowed to put their name on any sort of paperwork. It's all internal and hush hush. For 20 years, we supported the organization Zimmer and their orthopedics division at the major trade show that they do annually. We were fortunate enough to be involved in the design of the exhibits over the years, And this was an exhibit that was 100 wide by 200 deep and had moving LED walls and all sorts of production that supported their medical devices and the procedures used to implant them. And we were very fortunate to have that sort of longevity with them. When we started here, there were other small companies that were just getting started in little two-story buildings. Adobe comes to mind. And we kind of grew up with the Valley. And we're fortunate enough to latch on to a number of what at the time were really startups. Adobe, Symantec for security. And those companies have been customers of ours since the early 90s.
That's really cool. Really cool. And you're used to these large scale productions, but the pandemic devastated live events industry. I mean, we know that just from an attendee standpoint. How did you lead your company through that time? And what did it teach you as a business owner?
Great question. I'm thrilled and proud to say that, as you had mentioned, we stayed open. We kept everybody employed. In late February of 2020, we had just finished up an event in Spain for a division of Stryker. It was a global meeting. We follow our customers. They're very concerned about things being consistent, so we send consistent production crews, etc. And while that conference was going on, huge international public conventions were being canceled left and right. In fact, we had said if it had happened a week sooner, we probably would have canceled the meeting that we were there to do. Then come March 16th, when pretty much everything shut down, the morning of the 16th, before it was announced that we would all be sheltering in place, we had a company meeting to talk about what the temperature looked like out there, talked about preparing for that and potentially reducing salaries across the board rather than laying anyone off. That decision was actually made by the company, not by me. I brought it to them a little later in the day when we reconvened that meeting and sent everyone home. People chose to take a cut in salary rather than having any of their coworkers laid off. That speaks to the culture here. I still have 24 people that have been here 20 years. And longevity in this business, in terms of tenure, you don't see that a lot. But that's also how we've been able to keep the customers that we have, clients, for so long. Anyway, time went on and we had internal management meeting pretty much every day on the phone or on Zoom very quickly in March. And come about 6 weeks later, we were fortunate enough to have a client, customer, partner, Intuit, go to bat for us with the county and basically say we're an essential company, an essential service for them to communicate with their employees. So we were allowed back in the office and we started out with just basic, almost like we're doing here, Jamie. And it turned into big curved LED wall, XR capable Studio A. We had Studio B. And we didn't really have a big background in virtual, but I don't think anyone did. We learned an awful lot really fast and were able to send people out to people's homes, set up a rig in their garage, get it all going, then leave so the person in the house could come into the garage and do the podcast while social distancing. It was a crazy time. And we got really, really busy.
That's actually a really cool story that you were able to pivot and do that. And also what stands out to me is you saying this wasn't my decision, this was a company decision to kind of make that hard call and not lay anybody off and instead do a reduction in salary. I spoke to one other person this week who is actually talking about the same thing, totally different industry, completely different circumstances, but said the same thing. Is the type of culture that they had is one that when they were faced with all of that, that the company came together and all of the employees basically said, hey, we would rather all of us take this on than, you know, see anybody go. And you've kept your team together through decades of change. So I'm curious to know, what's your secret to building a culture like that that lasts?
I would say that it's always been really important to me to empower people to do what they're passionate about. He doesn't work here anymore, but I had our senior technical director and production manager was here for 25 years. He got married and is now a freelancer, which is all great. He still does some work for us. He started as a truck driver. Background in music, background in theater. And we've hired a lot of people in different departments that have ended up taking off in another one. And we've always supported that. There's a number of folks that I've mentored over the years that might have been stagehands or worked part-time, you know, in a theater where you can't make any money, of course, and brought them along. And they don't even necessarily work for me for the most part, but they've become really successful in their field. And that's really what it's all about. And that translates to client relationships. The turnover in corporate marketing is certainly volatile. And we've been fortunate enough. We were just talking about this yesterday. We have a customer who we've worked with through five job positions at five different companies that she's worked for. She's brought us along. We stuck with her. She stuck with us. And yeah, it's such a relationship driven business. One thing I wanted to say about the pandemic is when all that stuff shut down, we had a major multi-million-dollar project that got canceled. We were holding a significant deposit, which based on the timing was something that we were probably going to have to return. The decision was made by our customer contact and the people above him to let us keep it and use it for the next time the show was produced. Well, that alone got us from March to early June when we started, when we started the virtual. And then as it turned out, we were actually brought in the next year by an outside agency to do a virtual version of the show that had canceled. And we've continued to work for that client, but it was a blessing. I'm not sure how we could have gotten where we were so quickly if we hadn't had that cash influx that we could keep. And again, that speaks to the relationships that we have, the confidence that our clients have in us, and it makes for really good business.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I feel like when everybody kind of goes in with those pure good intentions and you have those relationships with people, sometimes a little bit of luck comes your way. And everyone that I talk to, a lot of the things are controlling what you can control, which is how you interact with people, what your culture's like. And it sounds like you're very much finding people's passions and what they're good at and helping them grow that internally. And therefore, it only makes sense that it translates externally to your clients as well in finding out what it is that, what do they want the event to look like? How do you reach their, you know, vision of whatever passion they have, however they want it to look and feel. And so I think that's really cool. But you're also a teacher, a board member, you're an advocate for industry education. Why is mentorship and knowledge sharing so important to you?
You know, what a great question. It's been important to me since before this business got started. There was a 50-50 chance that I was going to become a technical director in a college theater program when I got out of graduate school. The other 50% chance was that I was going to just dump everything and get a little 10-foot bobtail and some gear and drive out to California to meet up with a guy I went to college with. And the whole idea was to produce events and to make a difference in some way. I was never going to be a doctor or a lawyer, and that's where my passion was. And I think the teaching part of it came out of the teaching position that I had when I was at Indiana University getting my graduate degree. I was teaching lighting 101 and that sort of thing for actors. And I did a similar thing at San Jose State when we were growing, when it was two of us in a pool house garage, not kidding. And because I'd had the degree and I had some ins at the university because of my partner, I was able to teach some courses, and then I was invited to design some things. And then as we grew, it was all about teaching people to think like we do and be customer focused all the time. And at the time, there was nobody else around in the South Bay here doing anything like that, because corporate theater was sort of being invented during the early to mid 80s. The transition from slide projectors to video, quite literally.
I remember it. I remember that time.
We used to do 27 projector shows and all that sort of thing that, you know, a lot of people have no idea what I'm talking about. That might be, you know, my children's age, yeah, or whatever, never had a slide projector or a VHS VCR. I digress.
Yes, yes. I mean, I can absolutely identify, and I'm feeling you. I'd much rather have this conversation with you than the one I was having with my son yesterday about the 1900s. So this, I'm like, yes, I do remember that time. It wasn't that long ago.
No, it was not.
Yeah, but that makes a lot of sense. Is I see people that kind of live like this with open hands, actually kind of, you know, and you're talking about culture and everything. I can see why that comes back as well. It's, and most of those people who are, you know, really generous with their wisdom and things that they've learned and their experiences and lessons tend to really, you know, it comes back to you. And I'm not surprised that a business or, you know, a big enough organization to have such a big production would say, hey, just hold on to that deposit, you know. And I'm not surprised that that teaching component and all that community side of it is there, because I see that those types of characteristics kind of go hand in hand. And I'm kind of like, looking at the Rhythm Academy of San Jose as well. And I kind of have a feeling this maybe has a little bit to do with that side of things as well. But what inspired that venture, and how does that fit into your broader story as an entrepreneur?
Wow. Before I came to my senses and went back to college, I was a professional musician. I was a drummer and a vocalist in a band based out of Hawaii, where I grew up, that toured for a period of time. And subsequent to all of that, I met a gentleman named Paul who happened to manage a local drum shop. My son took lessons there at the time many years ago. He and I became the best of friends. I would consider him one of my couple of closest friends. He had this idea when the internet took over and small music stores couldn't really cope too well with that. But the store that he managed and at the time co-owned had teachers and teaching rooms, but the store, as I started to say, closed. So it was his idea that he take these number of drummers who were also teachers and to try to create something that could be self-sustaining, not something that he was going to make any money doing, but we were filling a need. And the guy didn't have any startup money. He couldn't get the space, needed to soundproof rooms and that sort of thing. And so that's what I was here to help doing and really support that. There are 11 teachers that work out of there now, 7 days a week. There's 6 different rooms. They all have 2 drum kits. And, you know, I'm so proud that it's managed to continue to function on its own. And he lives actually down in LA now and works for a major drum manufacturer. But every once in a while, he gets up here and, you know, we sort of have a board meeting of the two of us. But that's something I'm really excited about. I have a little side business called Falcon Custom Drums and Rehab, which is the custom stave snare drums and a lot of rehabbing of friends and clients' drum sets, recovering, repairing, that sort of thing. It's really a hobby now that I don't have a lot of time for, but it's something that I have a lot of passion about.
That's so really cool. And so we've come to the point in the podcast where I ask you our signature question, because you just have had a really kind of cool 40 years, I think, in this business. It's not really common that we get to stay in that same industry or in the same space for so long. And I can only imagine the wealth of knowledge that you have. But in your experience, what does it take to be a business owner?
I think it was different in 1987 than it is now. Certainly. I grew up in an analog world. There was no digital anything when we started. And that was a really good basis for launching into a more digital world. I think it takes patience above and beyond. Patience is one of the most important things. Being willing to listen, not being stuck on what I necessarily think, but value the input of others. There was never an idea in 1987 when we started that we would someday become a $20 million company. We were there to provide a service that there wasn't anyone else out there providing. Perseverance, obviously. Creativity, when it came to the pandemic, there was no plan per se, other than, you know, we're going to hit the phones and we're going to reach out to folks and people are going to find out that we can do these virtual events, you know, out of our building here. And we can provide nurses and COVID specialists and testing and all that sort of thing. You need to be flexible and to go with the next right thing.
I love that.
Patience, again. It's where I started. It's where I will end. There's the old saying that came from the 1900s, I think, that that if you have your own business, you'll never work a day in your life. Okay, well, that's clearly not true. And I'm here to tell you that. It's a commitment. You can't, oh, I can start my own business. Then I can just take time off whenever I want to. Couldn't be further from the truth. If you want to be successful, you're in it 24/7.
Absolutely. I think that's really good. And just the fact that you're saying patience, I think the things that you face in business owning, they're not anything that you could ever dream up or prepare for. That's and so for those sure. skills of, you know, developing that, I think, ahead of time and just having that expectation going. And many people, I think, go into it because they think they can do it better, because they think they will have more freedom. Many people, when they're first starting out, you know, have that twinkle in their eye. They've got a passion, they've got a purpose, but maybe not realistic expectations. And I think if you can go in expecting that you're going to have to be flexible, that you're going to have to be even more so than you are in the working world, right? You're going to have to compromise even more. You're going to have to get really, really creative. And I love that. Do the next right thing. I've heard that a few times from people. Is there's so many things, right? There's so many things that you could be doing. And some of them could all be right. Some of them could all be wrong, right? But I think that that's a really good thing for me, is recognizing, do the next right thing. And that could be on a whole long list of right things. But you've got to really be sure about what it is that you're doing and being able to discern that and choose that. I love not being stuck in your own ideas too, because I think that's one thing about me, that I went into it wanting to do things my way, right? And then you're here. And if you're in business and owning it for even a short amount of time, you realize really quickly you've got to get out of your own way. So I think that's just a wealth of knowledge and and wisdom right there. So, Evan, thank you so much for joining us today and giving us a look behind the curtain.
You're so welcome.
I mean, I'm inspired by your story. It's such a powerful reminder that success doesn't just come from talent or timing. It comes from resilience, you know, creativity, like you said, and leading with purpose. And I think from theater tech to corporate stages, from live events to virtual pivots, you've shown what it means to evolve without losing sight of the human side of business, because those relationships are really what kept you guys going. So to our listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow, rate, review What It Takes. And if you want to learn more about Riverview Systems Group, Evan, where can they find you?
www.riverview.com. And okay. We're on all the socials.
All the socials. Yeah, we can put a lot of those links in our podcast notes as well. So until next time, keep dreaming big, keep leading boldly, and keep doing what it takes. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks very much, Jimmy.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.